Good morning, and thanks for tuning in to Community Conversations here on 88.5 KRFY. I'm today's host, Chris Bessler. Today we're talking about local education in the time of pandemic with Lake Pend'Oreille School District Superintendent Tom Albertson and Chief Financial Officer Lisa Howes. Our school operations and education overall have, of course, been greatly impacted by the coronavirus. And today we discuss the safety protocols in place for both students and employees, the impact the pandemic is having on the school budget, and how learning has been affected for kids. But first, a few words about this show. This conversation was recorded 2 days earlier. We air Community Conversations every Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. with recorded interviews on local issues. Plus, there's a podcast of each show that's available after airtime on our website at krfy.org. Community Conversations is actually just a stand-in for the live morning show that formerly aired at this time. We intend for the live morning show to come back once we get past the coronavirus precautions that have closed our studio for live interviews. And with vaccinations now being distributed, we're hopeful that will be sooner than later. Speaking of vaccines, next Thursday on Community Conversations, our host Susie Prez will be talking with personnel from the Panhandle Health District about its vaccination rollout and the clinic's plan to get our local residents vaccinated. So be sure to tune in for that informative discussion, 8 a.m. on Thursday, January 21st. And now, let's get on with today's talk about our local schools and education.
We're speaking now with the Lake Pend'Oreille School District Superintendent of Schools, Tom Albertson. Tom, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Chris.
And Chief Financial Officer Lisa Halls. Did I get your title correct there, Lisa?
Yes, you did. Good morning.
Good morning. Thanks so much for taking time to talk to us. And our goal here is to just check in on schools. We're into 2021 now. The schools are back in session. And of course, the big thing that is affecting schools in a way that's they've never been affected, as far as I know, is the COVID pandemic. So why don't we start there? And Tom, maybe you could describe what types of measures the school is taking to keep both the students and the employees safe.
Yeah, obviously this is unprecedented times, and from previous times that we've had conversation, Chris, we kind of outlined our plan and looking for silver linings through these tough times. One thing I am proud of is that we've had to have very little adjustments for the original plan that we put out. Just to remind the listeners that it is a hybrid plan with a shortened, concentrated instructional time in the day from about 8 to 1 approximately. And it is strongly cohorted at the elementary level where there's very little interaction amongst grade levels, but they're concentrated within their class with increased safety measures from increased sanitization, hand washing, face coverings. And, at the secondary level, we adjusted our operational schedules where kids were taking less classes. So they're balancing less at one time, and it's also concentrated. And again, our custodial staff sanitizes the schools every night, pretty extensive protocols that we have put in place and haven't had to make major adjustments. That's kind of what allowed us to be in school 5 days a week, even though they are shortened days. So that's kind of a really quick synopsis of what we're doing, though it's much more complicated than that.
I'm sure it is.
That'll get us started.
So as pertains to the employees, they're exposed. They're certainly what you would consider frontline workers, and they're exposed right to the potential to contract the coronavirus more than the average person in our community. How's the staff handling this?
And I say within our country, this is a of a time where I think we've had opinions that are much varying. What we try to do is protect our staff as much as we possibly can. From changing some of the teaching practices, being socially distanced, having staff mandatory, having our face coverings on, increased sanitization on their part, staff meetings via Zoom, limiting the exposure they have with other adults in the building. And again, there's all sorts of research out there of how much students are spreaders or not, and at what age. You know, is it age 10? Is it age 11? I mean, there's so much out there that we don't know. So we try to take every precaution possible. We also know that through the CARES Act dollars, we've had 10 additional what we call COVID days. So if they have been close contacts or needed to be out and quarantined, we're not... we welcome that, I should say. We don't welcome it, but we aren't penalizing them with their sick days. We have additional days to work with them to make sure that they are staying as safe as possible. Mm-hmm.
And how about the students? Do some of the students have to mask up, the older kids?
Yeah, grade 7 through 12, we do have face coverings required. Taking less classes, so they're interacting with less students, and then also having a shortened day. So they're in, there's just less time within that day for them to be interacting. An example of that would be at Sandpoint High School, they moved to a 4x4 schedule. So on any given day, a student is going to only be with four groups, four classes, instead of eight over 2 days in our previous schedule. And then we also were able to reduce class sizes. So they may only be in a class of 15 to 18 kids rather than 25 to 28. And then along that line also, there is an option for parents and students to fully learn remotely through our teachers' learning management systems that they have set up. And that's basically what the teachers are managing and working in the afternoon on. So they manage an online classroom presence in addition to the face-to-face. So that's why it's really called a hybrid. So trying to give parents as many options as possible, what they feel is best for their family.
So how do you judge the attitude of the kids? Are the kids adapting to this okay?
Yeah, I mean, kids are glad to be back in school. I mean, we know that we have limited our instructional time with the teacher, and we do expect there will be some learning gaps there. By us having daily contact with the students, though it is less minutes, we feel that is the best mitigating factor we could do to lessen that COVID learning gap that's going to come our way. I think we'll know the full impact of that next year. We had 3 months where kids were completely out of school, and now we have shortened days. But by having that continued contact, I think is the best plan we could think of putting together to try to mitigate that learning gap. But we will have assessments to measure that, and we really aren't going to know the full impact of that yet.
And the goal, of course, is to keep kids in the schools. There are some states that kids are still not going to school, or with the surge we've seen in some states, that they've stopped going to school again.
Correct. Yeah.
So last year we had the example of the way it impacted the older kids. They lost a lot of their traditional activities, including sports and graduation and things like that. Are we going to see those kinds of impacts on our older kids, particularly the graduating seniors?
I think time will tell. One hopeful bright spot right now is, the vaccination clinics that are coming into our communities in the near future. I know our K-12 staff are classified as 1B essential workers. And I think that will be a big help for our work staff. And, and then as more of the general population chooses to get the vaccination, I hope that we'll start to see some changes to maybe what we're more used to. We still are having activities going on. It's just limited capacity. with the fan base, and then also at any point in time, if there is a COVID pause or interruption from one team or the other, we have cancellations and reschedules and kind of an abbreviated season. But, you know, I still believe it's important for kids to have some type of activity and be have some level of involvement, trying to make it as safe as possible.
Extracurricular activities are definitely a part of the whole education of kids.
Right, right.
So let's bring Lisa in on this. Lisa, what kinds of budget impacts might we see as a result of all the different changes to operations, and as well as, you know, potential tax collections and support you might see from the state?
I guess a summary word would be uncertainty. And a few things have happened. When we shut down face-to-face instruction March 17th of 2020, almost concurrently, our governor had instituted all agencies a 1% holdback. And then we closed out our fiscal year that ended June 30th, 2020, actually in kind of a position that we expected. We had strategically deferred some revenue for the following fiscal year, just because there were signals that although Idaho's economy was very strong in January of 2020, that there may be some kind of mild recession on the horizon. And then the legislature adjourned, and then July 1st of 2020, the governor issued a 5% holdback. And if you don't know what a holdback that is, that means that what the legislature appropriated now, in this case, 5% of that appropriation would not be appropriated. And as the summer unfolded and our board approved the reopening plan in August of 2020, we knew there were going to be additional costs, but the magnitude of those costs, for example, deploying 5 additional custodians, transitioning how we deliver the breakfast and lunch program now to students in their classroom versus them going to the cafeteria for safety measures, training our teachers on different elements of distance learning. All of those actually added up to, you know, sort of very conservatively, the things we could quantify, almost $1 million. And then in September of 2020, our governor elected to use the portion of the Federal CARES Act that was appropriated in March of 2020 to kind of augment the K-12 funding. And it was almost equivalent dollar amount to the 5% holdback, but the expenses that were allowable were relatively narrow, and they had to be expended by December of 2020. So that's that for us. That was $1.2 million. We're extremely grateful that the governor made, you know, had that kind of policy plank and decision making. And just more recently, you're probably aware that Congress passed in mid-December. I don't have the lexicon right yet, but another CARES Act, and we just learned yesterday what that appropriation was, and it's about a little more than 4.5 times the original appropriation for us. So the legislative session started kind of last Thursday and Friday with the annual Economic Outlook and Revenue Assessment Committee. And then they will follow up this Thursday with their revenue projection. And then the governor yesterday opened up with his state of the state and his revenue projection, or his increase for the K-12 appropriation for the fiscal year that starts July 1st is around 4%. That's what his original request was last year, 4.1%. The numbers that the assessment committee we're hearing from the Idaho State Tax Commission, the Associated Tax Committee, hovering in the 5 to 6% range. Idaho, as one of the most open states in the nation in terms of not, you know, clamping down on all of the economy, is performing beyond even expectations of the adopted budgets when the legislature adjourned last April.
Yeah, the number I've seen is that the state, due to the holdback and higher collections than projected, it has a record $600 million surplus. Is some of that going to come back to help school districts that might have been impacted more severely?
So I have asked the Division of Financial Management for the details of what the governor presented yesterday. I have yet to see the details, so I don't want to, you know, kind of get out of my lane. Certainly discussion of what would or would not be done legislatively with that surplus. You heard yesterday from the governor that he's interested in some one-time, pretty solid infrastructure projects. Specific to the K-12 public budget, there was one important thing that was a result of the 5% holdback, which was freezing the way the state pays or reimburses or allocates money for teacher compensation. And so certainly in his request there, that's significant, at least in terms of the, of course, there's the budget, there's the governor, and then there's the Joint Finance Appropriation Committee, but it's ultimately the House and the Senate that appropriate. So we're technically one day into the legislative session. We don't want to get ahead of ourselves, but in terms of overall performance of Idaho versus basically the entire nation, our agency budgets probably are positioned a lot better because of Idaho's current economy, and also because since the Great Recession, Idaho learned a very hard lesson where they basically brought their reserves to zero, and I do mean zero, and they have by legislation and built up the state of Idaho's reserves. And that's true on Lake Ponderay School District side. We've had a board policy for 18 years where we're committed to building up our reserves in case of an unforeseen event.
And a pandemic or a recession, yeah.
Right. And in 2009, we dipped heavily into those reserves. We've been able to build them up, and we became even more aggressive as we felt like there might be a recession being signaled. And I just appreciate the board's commitment to that, because now, you know, you have a once in a century event. And as Tom was articulating earlier, we've made changes, but those reserves have helped allow us to continue, the operations of the school district, delivering by and large the same programs, irrespective of the pandemic.
So it seems like fiscally, the district's pretty healthy, even with all the confusion of the...
I could weigh in on that. Yes, we feel that we're in a good position, but we're also in a very difficult position. And Lisa had alluded to this, is that when 5% of your budget is held back, and then it is supplanted by federal emergency dollars that have a lot of restrictions to it, that everybody says, well, they were made whole again, but that's not exactly accurate, because we can't spend that money the way that we normally would or would see that would be best for students' education. So we're limited in that, and that's what we don't know moving forward, what those criteria, if it's going to be the same on this next round of relief dollars or not. And as you can tell, we're very fortunate to have Lisa Halls managing our funds, as she is very well connected to Boise and stays on top of that. But so I think the listeners need to understand the challenges we have. It's not just replacing this money with this money because of some of those restrictions we have. And that's a challenge for us to figure out how we can, provide what we know is or view as what's best for students when there are restrictions put on some of those dollars. So
the other thing I would share with your listeners, Chris, is you touched on it earlier. Well, property tax collections in terms of default rate, you can ask the county. They're actually the payments are percentage-wise, the default rate dropped. And as you've also alluded, the net taxable value of the county, and we're not all of the county, but within our district, we pretty much align. You know, it was about an 11% increase last year, but that doesn't mean that we are receiving more property tax. We have a fixed levy amount into it's a permanent levy. It starts July 1st of 2021. It's the identical amount that we've now levied, for 4 years, Mm-hmm. And so that's, it's about 35% of our budget. And of course we, property tax is a very solid revenue stream for all of the public entities, but K-12, unlike the count, every other taxing district, the way we collect the property taxes for us, it's a fixed amount. It doesn't float with, in this case, for all the other taxing districts, it's a 3% increase year over year in the amount you're allowed to collect. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. So they won't see a change in the tax rate on their property tax bills this year, as far as
They definitely will see a change. It's a drop.
A drop. Okay.
Up in the tax rate.
Right.
We do not levy on a rate. We levy on a fixed amount. So
that's right. So so with the increase in property values, actually the rate will probably end up dropping.
Right. The rate it certainly has dropped.
Yeah. Okay. Well, let's talk about the financial side. Let's talk about some academics with the time we have left. Tom, you mentioned or alluded to the fact that there's going to be some learning gaps that are incurred because of the way instruction has changed. Do you want to talk about how the district will address that as we go forward?
Yeah. First of all, I would say the positives that I, and this is what I get from classroom teachers and building principals that's happening, is that the time of instruction that's happening right now from that abbreviated 8-to-1 is very focused and very concentrated. Students are eating lunch in their classroom. They're staying in that close cohort. So a lot is getting done in that 5-hour span. As we all know, education is about the whole child. And we're really concentrating this focused time on our English language arts, which is making sure that we're minimizing the gap in reading, writing, speaking, and listening skills. And those are standards from the state of Idaho that we really focus on, and also math. So we're focusing our area on that. Our specialists that work with our students in music and art and physical education, we're going to be less in those minutes and those hours. So again, we're looking at our core subjects, making sure that we're trying to minimize those gaps, but we know, the importance of educating that whole child is extremely important too. So, as far as academic gaps, we do our IRI literacy testing. We will have our state exams from the ISAT. We do have our PSAT and our SAT, and we will have those assessments along with a strong pretest, post-test just in every unit, just seeing where we can measure student growth. So we have a lot of assessments there. It's just going to take time to step back and say, okay, where did we slip from where we were? And then strategically, through differentiated instruction, small group instruction, how are we going to fill those gaps back in? And it's going to take some time. And what I know about kids is they're resilient and they're going to be okay. But we will have a strategic plan of how we do that through collaborating with our teachers and having solid instruction for all students, and just continue monitoring that. So again, there'll be quite a bit of work next summer, just us looking at what the end of the year data looks like, and then knowing what we need to do to support that student learning. So I would say right now, Chris, it's less minutes for the whole child education piece and us really focusing in on ELA and math at this time. And that would probably be a quick summary. So, yeah.
Okay.
Something, Chris, that you haven't brought up is we've seen like almost all the brick and mortar school districts in the state, a significant drop in our student enrollment. We lost between, you know, how you look at 8 or 9% of our students.
Oh,
mm-hmm. It's and that's an issue statewide.
You broke up a little bit there, Lisa.
The drop in enrollment
went up 8 or 9%, you said?
No, it dropped.
Okay.
About 8 or 9%. And okay. It's an issue not only for Lake Ponderay School District, but statewide. And it's an academic as well as a financial issue.
Right. Because you receive state funds based on your enrollment. Well, that raises a question. The district did kick off kind of an innovative program a few years ago, the Homeschool Academy, to support parents that are teaching their kids at home. Has that changed any in light of the pandemic? Is there greater enrollment there? Or
I think there, again, we put some increased safety measures of making sure that we could social distance the kids coming in. And within that program, families usually get to choose 2 days a week. So there may have been a slight increase, but we did cap it at about, I think Melinda Rossman, through working with Andrew Murray, Director of Teaching and Learning, capped it at about 112, somewhere where we knew that their groups of students they could bring in could still be socially distanced within the space that we had. So it did not drop at all. We maybe could have built the capacity, but don't really have the capacity at space, putting some of the safety measures that we put in place. So, yeah.
Okay. Well, any other academic programs or actually anything going on in the schools that you'd like to mention?
I want to thank our school board for closely monitoring, our community spread of COVID, and then our school nursing staff. It works diligently on contact tracing within our schools, and we track the number of cases we're having in schools. So with that data, we keep a close eye, and obviously, the school board has some tough decisions to make. You know, we saw some spikes after holidays. There was a small one after Halloween, and then a much larger one after Thanksgiving. And then we were kind of on a downward trend, just checking as of last night. You know, there's a small little uptick, and we'll know probably in the next week or two if the winter break had caused more community spread. So we monitor that closely, and our board is committed to meeting at any point in time to make any decisions, whether we would need to put a pause on an individual school, individual classroom. We just want to be as safe as possible, but understanding the importance of keeping students in school. You know, you'd mentioned other states. I see where, you know, there's a rollout plan across the border in the state of Washington for them to be starting to bring students back in. I'm always watching that closely also, how that works. So,
well, speaking of the school board, that raises a question. Will there be some school board seats that are up for election this year?
I believe there will be, what is there going to be, 2 or 3 seats next November.
And not till November, okay.
Not till November, yeah. Right.
Because we don't have a levy election this year, right?
We do not. No, we do not. We will not be coming to the voters for anything on the ballot as far as the school district.
Okay, well, folks will want to pay attention to that. And if they're interested in serving, that's an opportunity as well to serve on our school board if they want to stand for election when that rolls around in the fall. Well, Tom Alberson, Superintendent of Schools, Lisa Hollis, Chief Financial Officer. I want to say thanks for taking some time to talk with us. And we like to swing back periodically and catch up on the schools. So I'd like to suggest maybe when we get it later into the spring, we can have another conversation.
That'd be great.
Thank you for asking us on, Chris.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
All right.
That's it for our community conversation today. If you've just tuned in, we've been talking with Lake Pend'Oreille School District Superintendent Tom Alberson and Chief Financial Officer Lisa Halls. I'm Chris Bessler. Remember, if you missed part of the show, you can hear the recorded podcast on our website at www.krfy.org. Just click on the podcast button on the top of our homepage. Meantime, be sure to tune in each Tuesday and Thursday at 8 a.m. to 88.5 KRFY for more community conversations. Thank you for listening today.